This morning we come to the close of our storm shelter series. It's hard to believe we've been doing this since January. And I think from your emails and comments, you've been blessed as much as I have by every single testimony. If you go back, for some reason you hadn't been able to make this whole journey with us, you've traveled or you're a guest today and say, I don't know what this is about. Well, we talked about starting January a series of storms that have hit people. And many times folks say, you Christians are in denial. No matter what comes, you say, well, I'm going to trust the Lord. Well, we found that through trusting the Lord, we really can overcome every trial and every storm. Today, we come to the close of this series. I'm delighted Jennifer Haste is sitting. She's with me. My tongue's not working today. I'm grateful Jennifer is going to share an amazing story about a powerful storm that hit her life many years ago. Earlier in life, when she went through this, she became a survivor of a violent crime. Now, I want to tell you a couple of disclaimers before she comes, because being here 31 years, I've talked to a lot of you about some pretty private and difficult storms. So I want you to know that with Jennifer up here, I didn't go to her and say, Jennifer, you've got a powerful story. I want you to tell that to the church. I didn't do that. That would be intrusive. The reason I want you to know that I'm not going to come to you and say, you told me something, and I want you to get up front of the church and tell the church. I won't do that. Jennifer came to me about a year ago, I guess, been some time ago, and she said, Pastor, I need to tell you something. And the first time we talked was right over here for just a minute, and I got the gist of it. And she said, I went through a very difficult thing early in my life, and in recent days, the Lord's convicted me that if I don't share that and talk about what God did to heal me in spite of that, I've wasted it. And I don't want to waste that painful time in my life. So some time ago, when the staff and I got together and talked about this series called Storm Shelter and the storms of life that can afflict people and how they've overcome, immediately I said, that's the series that we ought to ask Jennifer to tell her story. This is the last one of those. I didn't necessarily delay it till the last. Between her travel schedule and our testimony schedule, it is the wrap-up, but it's such a powerful story. I got to say, I think it's a fitting conclusion to what we've been going through. So here's what we're going to do in just the next few minutes. Jennifer's going to just tell us a little bit about this story, how it came about, what happened since. But before she does, most of you know the Haste. John was here just a second ago recognizing Todd as our personnel chairman. Jennifer, obviously many of you know through various things that she's involved with. Jennifer, take just a minute. Tell us, who are you and John?
My name is Jennifer Haste, and we actually are residents of Broken Arrow, and I've been a member of this church since about 2004 when we moved here from Colorado. And I'm married to John Haste. You met him just a moment ago, or you may know him. And during the daytime, I'm a CPA, but I didn't go down the accounting road. I do IT consulting, so I either work in my home or I travel to clients and have been doing a lot of travel, but not so much recently. We have one son that's 32, almost 32, and he's going to be getting married in July, and he's just moving back to Tulsa.
Wonderful. Jennifer, your story is amazing, and from that moment you at least shared with me a bit of it, I was amazed that you were prompted by God to tell us. What moved you, your heart, and how did God work to say, you need to tell this?
Well, I have a very unique story, and I'm just finally ready to share it. I kept hearing over and over in my mind and reading things that, you know, you should share your story. And I just want others to know not so much what happened to me, but what God has done through me during this time, and his faithfulness, his protection, his healing power, his sovereignty, and the timing of everything in my story. And like Pastor said, about a year ago, he did a sermon from 2 Corinthians 1 about the God of comfort, which really spoke to me, and how we should use that then to comfort others. And my hope and prayer is that nobody in this room has the story that I have, but I know that everybody in this room has had storms of some sort in their life. And I just really feel like someone can benefit from hearing my story. I carried this for a long time silently, and I know that there might be someone else in this room that's carrying something silently as well.
Jennifer, sometimes there are needs that are just so deep and hurts that are so great. People say, I don't think even God could help me. And yet in your journey, it's just reverse. It, every time you've talked about this, you've said God's grace has been so real, so meaningful. Tell us, if you would, what is the event that changed your life?
Well, I'm going to start with when I was a young girl. I really didn't like the dark. I was afraid of the dark, and I was afraid of thunderstorms as a child. In fact, I would end up wandering into my parents' room if I could get away with it at night. And then when I got older and I got married, I was young married, and I really didn't like it when my husband at the time was gone. He would go hunting, and so I'd sometimes go stay out at my parents' house. And in April of 1990, I was 27 at the time, and I had just separated from my husband, or he had moved out. And so it was a difficult time for me at that time, and I had a four-year-old son at the time. And so we were just adjusting to being in the house on our own. And I went out to my parents' house about 3 weeks later after he had moved out. And we had dinner. And then we came home and went through our normal routine that we normally did. Gave Nate a bath, put him to bed. And then I stayed up for a little bit longer and locked the doors. And then I went to bed. And then about 1 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, and there was a man with a mask on and a jean jacket, and he had a crowbar raised up like he was in a threatening manner. And my son had actually wandered into bed with me that night, so he was actually in the bed with me. And the guy ordered me to put my hands behind my back and roll over, which I did. And then he tied my hands and took one of the pillowcases and pulled it down over my head. And I couldn't see. He had a mask on, so I have no idea who it was. And I was so terrified. I just prayed silently over and over again, Lord, please just, I don't know what he wants, just protect us. I didn't know if he was there to kill us. I didn't know what he was doing. And I asked him, I said, listen, you know, if you want something, I'll tell you where it is. Whatever you want, I'll do. And he said in this low, raspy voice, which is the one thing I did have to go on, he said, don't worry, you'll help me. And it was at that point in time I knew what was going to happen. And about that time, again, my four-year-old's in the room with me, he started to stir and wake up a little bit. And I told him, just do what the man says. And he was starting to cry. He knew something was wrong, of course. And he was starting to cry. And I just said, do what the guy wants. Just, you know, obey whatever he wants. And a four-year-old, his little body, his stomach was hurting. And he ended up just throwing up all over the floor. I think it was just his way of reacting to the stress of what was going on. And so without going into graphic detail of what happened that night in my room, it seemed to go on for quite some time. And he then tied my hands again behind my back and put me in my bed and ordered me, he said, don't call the police. And I was so scared, and I just laid there, and I can remember praying, like, God, I don't know if he's still in the room. I don't know if he's left. I couldn't hear anything. And I just laid there. And again, my hands are behind my back. I finally got him wiggled free. And I had a phone in my room. And so I called the police. And I was just so scared I couldn't move. And I said, I told the dispatcher, I said, please ring the doorbell 4 times because I need to know it's you guys and not him. And so they finally showed up, and I got out of my bed, and I went and answered my door. And then they came in and called my neighbor, and my neighbor came over and got Nate. And then they took me up to the hospital for an exam, and I met my parents there. And then I went down to the police station and had an extensive interview, as you can imagine, about what occurred. And I just had my life turned upside down by a horrific storm, and of course, I couldn't go back and live in that house again. So Nate and I moved in with my parents, and I spent basically the next year just getting back on my feet again. Last week we heard about Traydon's traumatic car accident and his brain injury that he had, and that's kind of what I was experiencing, but it was different. It was a different brain injury. It just took many baby steps to get to where I could even be in a room by myself. And I couldn't lay my head down at night, because that's what I did right before this happened, is I laid my head down and I closed my eyes. And it was just a very difficult time going forward.
Jennifer, just hearing you tell that, none of us can even fathom what you experienced in that moment, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically. What are some of the things that you experienced following that? What did you have to deal with in your mind and in reality?
Well, I was in shock. You think you know how you're going to react to something like that when it happens, and you have no idea. You just go into survival mode. And I was dealing with intense fear. It was really hard for me to process, of course, depression. I just had this feeling that this guy could just swoop in through the doors or the walls or something at night and come back. It's just weird how your mind works. But spent many nights, I was living with my parents, and I'm forever grateful for my mom. She spent many nights, sleepless nights, with me just trying to get me to lay down and go to sleep, because I really struggled with that. I was exhausted, and it was awkward seeing people that I knew, because I knew they knew, but they didn't know what to say, and that was just kind of an awkward time. And I was just basically robbed of my safety and security in my own home, and that's something that we look for in our homes, is safety and security.
Absolutely. Your 4-year-old was in the very room when this happened. How in the world do you explain to a 4-year-old? He had to be terrified, and he had to have a lot of fears himself. How do you explain something like that to him?
Well, I explained it to him at a 4-year-old level. He knew something had occurred, and I just told him that Bad Man broke into our house, and that's what we called him going forward, BM, which is kind of appropriate, I guess. And, you know, just as time went on, he would say, "Mom, did they find that bad man?" And I said, no, Nate, they're still looking for him, and we're going to just keep praying that someday the police will find him." And the police, in my case, did a great job. They had a long list of suspects. They looked at everybody from, you know, it's like I couldn't tell them anything other than I knew the guy's height. I knew he was Caucasian. I knew he smelled like smoke. And the voice, that's the only thing I had to give them. And so I didn't know if it was someone I worked with. I didn't know if it was a classmate I had grown up with. I didn't know if it was a friend's husband. I didn't know who it was. So in my mind, everybody in a certain height range was guilty. I didn't know. And so I'd go out to eat, and I'm kind of listening to people. I'm looking at their height, and it was just, that was the hardest part, was just not knowing. And to get closure, I really needed to know who it was. And so a year went by, and living at my parents' house, and I ended up getting a divorce that next summer. And the judge awarded me custody of my 5-year-old son at the time and my ex-husband's 357, which I still have today, and I'm licensed to carry. And I made the decision then to continue my education or go finish my education. So I then was making preparations to move to Laramie, Wyoming, to attend the University of Wyoming and take Nate with me.
Jennifer, you're here because you have a deep faith, and I know that to be true of you and John both. Having been a pastor for a long time and just talking not only to our people, but just to people, many times they say of us as Christians, you people, you're not real. I don't know. You pretend. You're here not because you're a pretender. You're not here because you're not very much in touch with reality of what happened. You're not a denier of reality. But somehow you've relied on the Lord so much that people would say, "I don't get it. How can you still serve a God that let that happen to you?" Well, help us a little bit. What did God do, both to help you in the moment, but then to help you afterwards, to help you recover and retain your faith and even see it deepen?
Well, my question would be, how could I not acknowledge him and what he's done? I saw God work miraculously through my situation over the years, and from the very beginning, I feel like the Lord protected us. Number one, I'm here sitting here telling you this story, so he answered my prayer that night. And so he provided protection, and even, you know, I later found out from the police that what this guy had done, I didn't even know what a hollow core door was until after this happened, and my back door leading into my garage was a hollow core door, and he had broken into my garage and then used a carpet knife, and he carved out two holes in my hollow core door and just simply stuck his hand through the door and turned the doorknob to get in. The door was locked when I went to bed, and then he came, he walked through my kitchen and into my bedroom, and I know this sounds really crazy, but I think that was God's protection, that I didn't hear him until he was right there, because it would have absolutely terrified me had I known someone was coming into my house, and I'm there, you know, just me and my four-year-old son. And even to this day, if I think about that, it terrifies me, so I just don't go there. But God's been my provider. He's surrounded me with people at key times over and over again that have prayed for me, and he's healed me, and he just very slowly started healing me to where I could sleep at night and carry on with life.
The comfort you received from the Lord was not a one-time, wow, I'm comforted, I'll never struggle again. Through the journey, you've experienced his comfort. Is that true?
Very much so.
Can you help us with that?
Yes. Like I said, he'd put people in my life just at the right times over and over, and I was a Christian before this happened, and I even started digging into his word even more and more, and found so many verses on do not fear, do not be afraid. And I also started listening to Christian music, which I still do today, just flooding my mind with positive and encouraging words. And that has helped me so much over the years. And I have just a couple verses that I want to share that I've clinged to. And one is from Psalm 4:8. In peace I will lie down and sleep, for God keeps me safe. And from 1 Peter 5:10, and the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. And he absolutely has done that in my life. I really relate to the story of Joseph and how what men meant for harm, God turns it into something good. And I also feel like I've been in the fiery furnace, and he was absolutely there with me during that time.
And never left you or forsook you, did he? Jennifer, you're a mighty strong lady of faith. You're a strong lady, certainly a strong lady of faith. I'm curious, when somebody, if and some of us have just had people break in your home, and you feel this sense of violation of your space, but how did you ever learn to feel secure again? How did God work to provide that for you?
It's been a lifelong endeavor, that's for sure. I couldn't have done it on my own. And so I had said earlier that after living with my parents for a year, I decided to go back to college. And so I took a road trip that next summer because I wanted to go. I went actually down to Fort Collins, Colorado. I was looking into CSU at the time, Colorado State University. And I got a hotel room and stayed there that night. And I got the hotel room, locked the door, put the chain over the door, and amazingly, I felt safe in a hotel room. Got a good night's sleep. And then I ended up actually going to the University of Wyoming, and God's just always been there. When I moved there, I didn't want to get just a regular apartment. I had my 5-year-old son with me, and so I didn't want him exposed to what could be the college party scene. And so I looked in the newspaper, and I found a house for rent. And that house had three apartments in the basement. And so I got an apartment in the basement of this house. And God is so good. What I later found out when I moved in was the people that were renting the main floor of the house was my old junior high teacher, science teacher. He and his wife and their little boy that was just a year older than my son, they were living on the top floor. And that was such a comfort to me because I felt secure. I knew Mr. Miller and his wife Karen, and they helped me with Nate, and then Nate had a playmate built in, and so it was just a perfect for me. I poured myself into my schoolwork and just trying to get, you know, my life back on track again and being a good mom, and I ended up graduating with honors, and I took the CPA exam and then was preparing to move to Denver, and I was actually starting to get my confidence back again during that time. And so we moved to Littleton, Colorado right after that, and I started my job. And oddly enough, I felt safer in a city of 2 million than I did in my little hometown of 20,000. And this was a time where I was really growing closer to the Lord. I joined a group with some other single moms at the time, and we met on Wednesday nights, and our kids attended Awana during that time. And that was a time that I just really leaned into the Lord, and it made such a difference. And I can remember going to a women's retreat, and they asked us to write down something that we wanted to turn over to the Lord. And, well, I wrote down about my situation, and just I wanted to move on. It's like I had been carrying this, and I needed to get past it. I'd come to realize that I would not probably know in this lifetime who assaulted me, and I had to turn that over to the Lord. And so that's what I wrote on my piece of paper, and that's what I did. And I just prayed that he would give me closure, and I had to forgive this guy and move on.
Jennifer, God's blessed you in so many ways, and I really do commend you for telling us your story to help people that feel like they're trapped and there's no way out. There is a way out, and you've demonstrated that. You've been blessed in so many ways in spite of this horrific event. One of those blessings, a man named John Haste, who came into your life. Tell us about how that happened.
Well, God had a plan, and I really didn't understand why I had to wait 8 years before I found John. But obviously, I had a few issues to work through, and God thought I needed 8 years to do that. And so I met John in Denver, and he has absolutely been my rock through this. And as you can imagine, I had to tell him early on what I had been through, because he needed to know. For example, we don't play scare me games. You know, he doesn't hide around the corner and jump out and scare me, because I'd probably deck him. Also, he travels a lot with his work, and we have a rule that if he's coming in late at night, he calls me before he gets to the house so that I know that he's coming in late and I know to expect him, and that's just how it's been. So after we ended up moving to Broken Arrow in 2004, and John got a new job here in Broken Arrow, and Nate had graduated, and so I found myself in a new town, and John was doing quite a bit of traveling, and I was home alone, and I didn't like it, but I was living with it. And I ended up starting to serve here in the youth, and we got involved here in the church. And then I actually was praying for a new job, and oddly enough, God gave me a job where I traveled a lot. I was traveling like 80 to 90%. And remember, I felt the safest in a hotel room. And so God, that's the job that God provided for me.
Jennifer, we know what happened, and we know about you and John and your life since. What about the man? Was he ever apprehended? And if so, tell us about that experience.
Well, like I told you, this happened in 1990. And so now fast forward 20 years to 2010. And like I said, I was doing a lot of traveling for my work, and 2010 showed up, and we were actually getting ready to go on a ski trip, and I was working out with Miranda Burcham, if you can imagine that. I'm surprised I can even remember this after one of her workouts. But we gathered up to pray after the workout, and one of the women that was there, she said she wanted to ask for prayer because she was going to Colorado to go to a court trial about a guy that had assaulted her, and she was getting to see him sentenced. And while my heart was really happy for her, I also just was thinking, Lord, why can't I find out who my guy was? But anyway, we prayed. And so then in September of that same year, I was in San Francisco at a conference, a big conference, and I was down in this big conference room, and there was like 5,000 people down there. And I get a call from John, and there was no way I could answer my phone. And so I get a text from him, and he said, you're going to get a call. Take it, with a couple exclamation points. I'm like, okay. And so sure enough, my phone rang a few minutes later, and I was still way down in the depths of this big conference room, and so I couldn't answer it, but I got up, and I looked at my phone, and it was a number from Wyoming. And my initial thought was, oh, crud, something's happened to my parents. And so I called the number back, and it was the Gillette, Wyoming Police Department. And I was talking to Detective Becky, and she said, Jennifer, I just want to let you know that your cold case has become suddenly red hot. And we would like to come to Oklahoma to talk to you. And I said, well, I'm not at Oklahoma. I'm in San Francisco, but I'm supposed to fly home tomorrow. I'd be happy to change my flight and go to Wyoming. So that's what I did. My verse. So, again, God's timing and his provision, I just see it all over this story. I was with it's not like you just tell someone. You know, I'm jumping for joy because something's going on with my case. I'm with these guys that I work with, but I did have one female colleague, and we were together that night. And so I told her a little bit about what was going on, which was comforting. But the next day, I did go to Wyoming, so I'm flying. I fly to Denver, and then I'm on this puddle jumper that you take up to Gillette, Wyoming, and 30,000 feet in the air. I just needed to hear from the Lord, so I'm flipping through my Bible, and I came across this verse for the very first time. And it's in Psalm 18, 48, 49. It says, he frees me from my enemies. You exalt me above my adversaries. You rescue me from violent men, and therefore I will praise you, Yahweh. Among the nations, I will sing of your name. So the next day, I met with the police department and in their conference room, and they put a lineup of six guys in front of me, and I didn't recognize any of them. I didn't know who they were, and they proceeded to tell me that they had a DNA match, and they were 99% sure that that one was the one that broke into my house that night in 1990. So I waited 20 years to find this information out, and couldn't believe it. I was in shock again, almost. So that weekend, they were in the process of getting their search warrants in place and getting ready to make their arrest, which they did the next Monday. And he was charged on four counts of violent crime. One was aggravated burglary. One was aggravated assault, first-degree sexual assault, and kidnapping because he held me in my home against my will. So God has answered my prayer, and I found out who it was. I got that closure I needed, and I couldn't be more thankful for that.
I can't imagine waiting 20 years, number one. Number two, because you didn't know by sight who this was, that would make you somewhat concerned, I assume, is this really the man? But then, I'm having never survived violent crime, when you finally hear we have a suspect, pretty sure this is him, do you suddenly have this horrific moment where you relive all that bad stuff? Or is a euphoric joy, I'm so glad they got him?
It definitely came back to me, like it kind of, you know, I was very happy, but it did come back to me. It kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. It was, I guess I would describe it as a wound or a scab had been knocked off. And again, he bonded out of jail the next day, and I was afraid again because in my mind I'm thinking he's going to come back and get me. Um Yeah, I was definitely very afraid that he was going to come back.
Well, let me build on that. Just say, I don't know what did this man go to trial? Is he in jail today? What's the rest of the story with him?
Well, I want to tell you first of all a little bit about how he was caught, and there was a woman. So he had lived in this area the whole time, kind of where I was from. He lived out by the lake, which is about 40 minutes away. He had worked side by side next to some of my friend's husbands in a power plant. So he was in the community the whole time. And there was a woman that noticed a car driving erratically, and so she turned him in and wanted the police to follow up, or the sheriff's department to follow up on him driving erratically. And so they did, and when they ran his information, they found out that he had a misdemeanor sexual offense of some sort in 2008 in Colorado. And so when they went to his door, they ordered him, or there had been a law that had been passed and that required him to, one, register as a sexual offender and also provide a DNA sample. And so if she would not have called them and made that tip about him just driving erratically, I probably still would not know who that was. So one of my messages here is, if you see something, say something, because that certainly made a difference in my case. So after he was arrested, and again, I'm scared to death because he's out on bond, but my detective ensured me that they were watching every move this guy was making, because we still had to wait for his preliminary hearing. And God was so good again, and just his sovereignty in this whole thing. I had just finished a project in Houston and was getting ready to go to a new project, an international project in Amsterdam. And I can't tell you how happy I was to be on the other side of the planet while this guy had bonded out of jail. And so I went over to Amsterdam and found a little church there that I went to and that I visited while I was over there. It was a 6 to 8 week assignment. And I walk in, and a woman comes up to me, and she goes, "You're an American, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, how can you tell?" And she said, "I can just tell." She said, and she introduced herself, and her name was Rita, and she was from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and she had attended ORU and was very familiar with Tulsa. It's almost like God just knew I needed someone from home at that point in time. And I know she was there as a missionary with her husband, and I know she prayed me through that situation. Mm-hmm. Well, then John came over during Thanksgiving time, and the timing again was perfect because I had been in contact with the district attorney about possibly coming up with, we were discussing options for plea agreements with this guy. His preliminary hearing was scheduled for early December, and so John's timing was perfect because I just needed the comfort of my husband to be there when we were talking about that. And so John came, and then he left that Sunday after Thanksgiving and went back to Oklahoma. And that next week, then on Friday, I got back to my apartment after work that day, and I had a message to call the district attorney. And so I gave him a call, and he said, "Jennifer, I just want you to know that bad man committed suicide," which was another shock. And, you know, I was almost angry at him because I was ready to face him at his trial. I felt like he took the cowardly way out of this by committing suicide. And I was relieved in some respects, but I was mad on the other hand. And my attorney kind of helped me work through it by telling me, "You know what, Jen, he did have his own trial. He got in a car in his backyard and had his trial and found himself guilty, and he administered his own punishment. And, you know, so it was over. All of his charges were dropped. Boom, it was over."
Jennifer, people, as we hear your story, are moved by your faith and your ability to be sustained through this. But one of the things we espouse and believe as Christians is that things, even bad things, can be used for God's glory. There are bad things that He uses so you don't waste your suffering. How are some ways God has used you since that time to do some marvelous things in His name?
Well, so I was in Amsterdam when that happened, and I did come home for Christmas, but my assignment turned into a 9-month assignment instead of a 6 to 8 week assignment. So I came home for Christmas, and then I was going to Amsterdam and staying there for about 8 weeks, and then I'd come home for 2 weeks. But while that was going on, Kevin Cottrell was here at First Baptist Broken Arrow planning his mission trips for the next year. And for the first time, he was planning one in the Netherlands. And I just happened to be in the Netherlands. So I found out that they would be coming in the summer, and I was still in the Netherlands at the time. So I joined up with the team that summer when they came over, and then continued going to the Netherlands each year for the next 4 years. So that was one way that God used me. And also, while I was in the Netherlands, that church I was going to was a very diverse church, lots of people from all over the globe. And I took some material over there, back over one time, and led a Beth Moore study with some of those women. And one of the other things that I did in Colorado to kind of help me move on, and I'm starting to get back into now, is working with victims of crime. I was a certified victim advocate for the Sheriff's Department in Arapahoe County, Colorado, and that was just a little bit healing for me because I know what it's like to have your world turned upside down in an instant and what that means. It was a lot of domestic violence cases, but it was also there were some death notices or accidents, that type of thing, and I'm just starting to get back into that here now.
Your story is amazing, Jennifer, and what God's done with you and through you is truly amazing as well. Is there anything else about this episode or about the Lord you want to share with us?
Yeah, so He has turned my mess into a message, and like I said, I've just been carrying it for so long. It's not just something you just tell every day. And He's empowered me now to share it, and that sermon that you gave a year ago kind of prompted me. It's like, okay, that's what I needed to hear. And following Bad Man's suicide, I did file a civil case against his estate, and that went on for like 4 years. It's a very slow process, and after 4 years, I did receive a very modest settlement from his case, and I have used a good portion of that money to establish an endowed scholarship.
Wow.
At the University of Wyoming for either a single parent or a non-traditional parent or non-traditional student that's in the business college. And I guess I would just want to say that there's so many things I can't explain in this case. I don't have all the answers. I got my closure. I found out who it was. But I certainly have many unanswered questions in my case. I don't know why I was singled out. I didn't know the guy. I don't know. I can't answer that, but that's okay. I choose to focus on what God's done through this, and I've just seen it over and over through the years of what He has done. And basically, you either lean into Him or you turn away during these life-changing storms, and He really is a storm shelter. We've seen that over and over again in the sermon series that you've done. So He basically helped me find strength that I never really knew I had, and I just give all the praise and glory to Him for that.
Jennifer, God bless you. What a powerful, powerful story. I know that your heart's been moved, and as mine was when I heard you tell me the first time. I wanted so much for her to be able to tell you the story for several reasons. One, I'm firmly convinced there are people in this room that have heart hurts that are 20, 30, 40 years old. You've never really been able to get rid of those, and you've never successfully seen them heal to the point you can move on. Anytime you hear about a bad experience, you go right back there instantly. Some of you are there right now because of what you just heard. The reason I wanted Jennifer to share was not because I'm not thinking, well, boy, this will be easy. It's not easy, and you could see her struggle in some parts of the story just to tell us. But I wanted to share it because she's not the only one that's had a storm. She's not the only one that's had a storm that's difficult. Now, many of you say, well, I wasn't raped. No, but there are many violent acts, abusive acts, cruel acts that can leave you terribly wounded. And human nature is, I just can't share it, so we just keep putting calluses on top. The truth is, and one reason Jennifer's been able to function at a level not just to get by but to excel and soar is that she was able to address it. She was able to commit that to the Lord wholeheartedly. The amazing thing, if we didn't have time to go into all that part of the story, was her ability to forgive the person, not as if to say, well, it doesn't matter. It crushed her. Forgiveness is not saying, well, it wasn't that bad. It's awful. Forgiveness doesn't give them permission to say, well, I'm going to give you a bye. You probably didn't know what you're doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. Forgiveness is none of those things. Forgiveness says, I'm going to trust the Lord to deal with you. I've got a life to live, and you're not going to steal my whole life. You may have had a moment that you wounded me deeply, but I'm going to commit you to the Lord. He'll deal with you. I'm not. I release you to him. That's what she did. I knew that at the close I would be wrapping up, and I kept thinking of marvelous verses. I found this one that I do love. Psalm 34 says this: the Lord is near. Listen, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. He saves those who are crushed in spirit. He's near the brokenhearted. Would that explain why some of you say, I know my Lord's very near? Charles Spurgeon was one of the great preachers of a previous generation. Spurgeon said, I'm certain that I never did grow in grace one half as much anywhere as I've grown in grace upon the bed of pain. David Wilkerson, the author of Crossing the Switchblade, longtime pastor in New York City, says, I look back over 50 years of ministry. I recall innumerable tests, trials, and times of crushing pain. But through it all, the Lord has proven faithful, loving, totally true to all of his promises. Jennifer, I'm going to take a liberty this morning going back to a passage that you said moved you and stirred you, because I do think that passage is so clear about talking about God's comfort. Comfort is not a sense of rest and because you're just physically tired. Comfort means giving you what you need, when if you don't get God's grace and comfort, you're going to perish. Comfort means I'm going through something so hard to handle that if you don't take me by the hand, I'm not going to make it. But we so often put biblical characters in stained glass with halos, thinking they just don't know what it's like. The truth is, we don't know what it was like for them. We may be about to find out in our nation what it is to pay for your faith with physical suffering. Paul the Apostle knew what it was to be persecuted and beat up, whipped and stoned, left for dead. But the passage that Jennifer referred to in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 says this: Blessed be God, Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort. He comforts us in all our afflictions. Did you hear that? He comforts us in all our afflictions, so that we may be able to comfort those. Are you kidding me? He comforts us in all our afflictions, so that we are able to comfort those who are in any kind of affliction. No, wait a minute. So God comforted Jennifer, so Jennifer today could be a source of comfort to somebody else who says, wow, I didn't know there was somebody been through that level of grief sitting near me in church. I know what that is to hurt. Maybe I ought to listen to what God did for you. That's what he said. I'm going to comfort you so you can comfort others through the comfort we receive when we needed it. For as the sufferings of Christ overflow to us, so our comfort overflows through Christ. If we're afflicted, it's for your comfort. If we're afflicted, it's for your salvation. If we're comforted, it's for your comfort, which is experienced in the endurance of the same sufferings. Our hope for you is firm, because we know that as you share in the sufferings, guess what? You're going to share in the comfort. Now listen to this, because if you've been through a hardship bad enough, and if I didn't ask Jennifer, but if I did, I think she'd say, I can relate. She did share. There were many nights that first year that She'd cry herself to sleep, and those would be short bursts of sleep because she'd wake up crying. I didn't ask her, but here's what Paul said about that time in his life. He said, I don't want you to be unaware, brothers, of what I went through, the affliction that took place in Asia. We were completely overwhelmed beyond our strength. Now listen to this. We despaired even of life. What does that mean? I don't want to get up today. I don't want to face another day. I can't. I don't have the strength. You ever been there? Well, if you haven't, you will. He said, this is Paul the Apostle, pretty good Christian. We despaired even of life, he said. Listen to this. However, personally, we felt like we were in something beyond our strength, so that even when we despaired of life, we personally felt like we had been put under a death sentence. But God did that for a purpose. And listen to this. God did that so that we would not trust in ourselves, but we'd learn to trust in God who raises the dead. And here's my favorite verse in this passage, 2 Corinthians 1:10. Listen, God has delivered us from such a terrible death. He will deliver us. We've placed our hope in Him that He will continue to deliver us. Past, present, future. 20+ years ago, He did deliver Jennifer. Her testimony is He has, through the journey, demonstrated His grace. And because of that, I didn't ask her specifically, but I think she'd nod in agreement. Pastor, because He has been with me all the way, I have every confidence He will continue to deliver me. She's not the only one here that needs that, is she? Is she? Today I want to offer you an opportunity in this storm shelter to come to the shelter of God's grace. First of all, to my brothers and sisters in Christ, some of you are walking with a pain that's so heavy it would crush you if it were not for God's mercies. Maybe you want to come today and just say, I just need to pray, Pastor. Hearing what she's had to say, she might as well have written my biography and just changed the crime to this one, and she would have told my story. You say, I have prayed. I'm asking today. Maybe you want to come pray and say, God, please hear my prayer. Please take this and use it in something other than my own grief. Please help me. Maybe some of you here have a loved one going through a great difficulty. You say, I sure wish you'd do that for my loved one. Some of you say, Brother Nick, I don't know Christ. Everything I've ever done, I've tried my own strength. Well, how's that going for you? Aren't you ready to say, I surrender? Run up the white flag and say, Jesus, I need you. I can't do this. And ask Him to do it. I want you to stand right where you are, would you? I'm going to pray for us. In a moment, we're going to have a marvelous song of invitation. Maybe there's somebody here say, Brother Nick, I need salvation. I need to be forgiven and given everlasting life. I've never really trusted Jesus, but I surely do need to. Why don't you come today and let the Lord give you that eternal life? Why don't you come say to a pastor, someone here at the front in the altar, I need Jesus. That's all you got to say. And they'll take it from there. Some of you here would say, Brother Nick, I'm not a member of this church, but I sure would like to be. Why don't you come and put your hand in the hand of one of these pastors and say, I'd like to follow today, become a member of First Baptist Church. Maybe today you know somebody in the room that's really hurting, and you feel freedom enough to go to that person and say, can I just pray for you? Could I just ask the Lord to bless you? Maybe stand somewhere right in front of you, behind you, beside you. Maybe the section across the other side of the room. Would you feel the freedom to be a comforter of God's grace today so the comfort you've received can be used to comfort somebody else? In just a moment when we sing, there's pastors here, be a sweet lady here to talk to ladies. If you say, I'd much rather talk to a lady as a lady than you come, there's a lady here to receive you. Father, I pray today there'd just be freedom here. Deal with us according to your mercies. Help us not to look to the right or the left, but to the face of Jesus, and bring those you ordained to come. In Jesus' name.